Hello, everybody, and welcome back to OMB Reviews. I am the critic who is a cynic. How is everyone doing this evening? Happy and blessed Tuesday, a blessed Easter to you all as we are continuing on in this amazing season of Easter as we commemorate and celebrate the resurrection of Christ. And we're going to talk today about the fact that no official feast day today, at least according to my calendar, but still a wonderful day to be alive. And welcome to episode 491 of the Welcome to Asgard podcast, where tonight we're going to talk about the box office, the truth about the box office when it comes to Godzilla X Kong, and of course, Dune Part 2. Dune Part 2 officially, now we can say, making profit, making some money. Because at the end of the day, we don't know exactly how much Legendary gets from the Chinese box office, the Chinese market. All we know is that it's not 25%, at least according to the guy who is the CEO, one of the top brass over at the Wanda Group, who owns now Legendary, has owned Legendary for several years. So all he said is that it's better than 25%, but again, What does that actually mean? What does that actually equate to? We still don't quite know. So it could be better than 25%, meaning that it could be 26%. It could be 27%. It could be a myriad of other things. But we don't know. So all we can do is go by what has always been true, which is that films that get released in China that are not born and bred in China, right, not completely 100% owned by China, and that's 25%. As far as what the studio gets back in return. That's all we can go by until another number is actually given from a reputable source. And even then, ultimately, we have to remember that when it comes to the Chinese Communist Party, are we really going to trust what they tell us with a lot of things? It's hard to say. By the way, over on Odyssey, I just saw, unfortunately, whenever I set the streams up a little early on Odyssey, the stream mutes for some reason. So I have just reset the stream, so it should start working for y'all very soon. So I just posted a message over there. So hopefully that reset has made things work. Let me double check and see if that has worked. So hopefully the reset has worked for you over on Odyssey. Please let me know if it has not. I'll keep an eye on the chat because my brain can only go in so many different places. So again, we're going to talk about the Godzilla X Kong box office. We're also going to, of course, talk about the Dune Part 2 box office. But, whew. A lot of stuff to talk about, and now I am distracted, so Odyssey, thank you for continuing to drive me insane. Not the people of Odyssey, but the platform. Anyway, please make sure you smash that like button, light up that fire button over on Odyssey, and smash the rumble button as well as we get started tonight, and hopefully I get my brain back on track. And I was supposed to be posting this in the YouTube chat, but thank you, Kinkan Rumsky, for letting me know that it did indeed post to the Rumble chat. But Luke Zilla, I'll have a special comment to your comment in just a second. If you were here before 7:06, I do not have your comment to highlight, so you have been warned. Jeremy Zakowski, what is going on? Welcome back to the channel. And yes, if you had asked me, if you had a choice between the MonsterVerse or Toho, I will always go leaning towards Toho. Absolutely. It's no contest. It's not even close. And I don't know who has seen Critical Drinker's review of the new Godzilla film, but let's just say I think he's probably one of the more honest persons out there when it comes to the coverage of the movie. Because he's clearly not a MonsterVerse cultist, as there are many MonsterVerse cultists out there. Not that anyone who is a fan of it is a cultist, but I mean, it's similar to what we find with the Marvel films or with the Snyderverse films, right? There are some people that are fans, and then there's some people where they will literally not nonstop try to justify their liking of something objectively bad until they're blue in the face. And it's interesting how similar it is amongst those different groups, right? It's one thing to be a fan. It's another thing to be kind of this blind cultist, but I digress. Kinkan Rumsky! What's going on? When did Odin post that? Yeah, so I was trying to post in the alt chat that I have in OBS, and I'm surprised it did not send it out to all the different platforms. It just sent it to Rumble for some reason, but hey, Kinkan Rumsky, welcome back. Glad to see you here. Fear of FEMA, what is going on? Hail to you. Prince Screen, who's a member. Hail to you. Thanks for being here. We got Mike Jackson in the chat. Hail to you. We got Guy, never says hi first, always just asks long questions. Key saying, do you think 2024 will be a big year for Warner Brothers? They had movies like Dune Part 2 and Godzilla X Kong and Mad Max is coming. Beetlejuice is also coming in Joker 2 and the new Lord of the Rings. So I'm going to have to say, depending on how those films actually do, the other thing you have to remember, okay, a film or studio, I should say, can post, we had a $1 billion year. But if you at the same time spent $1 billion or more, guess what? That doesn't mean anything. You can say we made $1 billion at the box office, but if you spent $1 billion or more, guess what? That means you lose. That's a terrible year at the box office for a studio like that. And that's what Warner Brothers has been suffering from for several years now when it comes to their box office movies. Even when you go to the MonsterVerse films. And again, I know that the number one automatic excuse people give is, well, they're getting more money because of Legendary being owned by Wanda. But no one can actually tell me what percentage they're getting back. And so until someone can show me that, we have to go by the standard. The standard is 25%. And according to that number, the MonsterVerse has been, box office-wise, a complete flop. And you can try to bring up, oh, well, they've been able to make money on toy sales. Again, show me the receipts. I'm not saying that it's not happening, but unless you have the receipts, you got nothing. If you're saying, oh, well, they've made a lot of money in the post-theatrical release. Okay, again, show me the receipts. Unless you have those receipts, all I have is the box office information. And again, the box office information has not been very kind towards MonsterVerse because they've been overspent. And that's the one thing I think this current movie has going in its favor, right? Is because they spent a lot less money on this one versus the others. And because it is still looking to make a fair amount of money, right? It's actually trending in the right direction. Like this for some reason, is trending better than some of the other films are. Now, I haven't seen the film myself. I had a ticket to go to see this film last week. And as I was getting closer to showtime, I said, you know what? I really just don't even want to waste my time. Because I've seen now every MonsterVerse film and every single one of them, except for the 2014 film, I totally regretted seeing. And I was like, wow, that just wasted my time, part of my life. And I can't get that time back. And so as I got closer to the showtime, I'm like, look, I know that I like to see new movies. It's kind of my thing. But I also got to the point where I'm like, I don't have to see this thing for homework for FNT. I don't have any other reason to see this film other than just saying I saw it and I'm kind of over it. I'm just so over it. And watching Critical Drinker's review just reminded me of why I just don't want to watch it. It sounds like, again, it's just brainless, mindless CGI fest monsters. And if that's your thing, hey, go ahead and enjoy it. But don't try and tell me or anyone else that that's good. You can enjoy bad movies. It's okay. The number one example I always like to use, right, is The Room, Tommy Wiseau. Objectively, it's a terrible movie. You cannot deny that it's not a terrible movie. And yet, I love it. Many people love it. It's the best, worst movie of all time. But again, it's that understanding of the objective that it's bad. Subjectively, it's enjoyable by many people. So if anyone ever tells me it's a bad movie, I say, yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a bad movie. No denial about that. And it's not for everybody. Whereas when it comes across with the MonsterVerse, if you say something very similar, you don't tend to get the admission, right? There's definitely some people on here in this chat because the Asgardian community is amazing who say, hey, I'll give it to you. These movies are terrible. I still enjoy them. It's like, hey, you enjoy whatever you want to enjoy. But my understanding and the way I've always thought about it, going back to the Toho comment, is ultimately, what do I want to see? Do I want to see 10 more Godzilla minus ones? Or do I want to see even just one more MonsterVerse film? And I'm going to take the Godzilla minus ones. And again, try to make the argument about money all you want. The box office does not actually support that based on the numbers that we have available to us. Going back to Warner Brothers, it depends. It ultimately depends because they spend a lot of money on production budgets, a lot of money on marketing costs. So who knows at this point? You know, Dune has been making money. Dune has started making money, but it's also, by the end of its run, not going to be a huge net gain for them as far as the overall picture. For Warner Brothers, they actually might end up, this is the tricky part with Warner Brothers, and this is also, I'll say this about the MonsterVerse with Warner Brothers specifically, Warner Brothers is probably walking away with a decent amount of change from both movies. But it's not because of the movies themselves. It's because of the deals they have with Legendary. Legendary, as a production company, is footing 75% of the bill in both cases, I believe. for both Dune and also for Godzilla X Kong. So they're taking the much bigger risk on those properties. In addition, Warner Brothers being the distributor means that they get a licensing fee for that, right? And so I think ultimately Warner Brothers comes out of it looking a lot better. But as far as the actual universes themselves, again, I think it ultimately comes down to how much is Legendary making out of it. And based on the numbers, it just does not seem, I don't know where the money would be coming from. Kingen Rumsky again, thank you for letting me know about that. Master of Gaming, what is going on? Kimberly G. Killian Shadowcat, what's going on? Kimberly G. Good evening, Odin. Orange Hat and others, what's going on? Ambrose Chamberpot, what's going on? Luke Zilla, hello to you. Snow Golem, lies, all lies, just kidding. I always try to keep things honest. Rogue Attraction, hey, Odin Chat, what's going on, Rogue? How's it going, brother? Are you in Las Vegas? I am clearly not. I have work. I have a full-time job. So that's just not possible for me, not to mention two kids. Wayward Noodle, what's going on? Welcome back. Thanks for being a member of the channel. Hannibal Grimm, Fosse, 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 hail to you. King and Rumsky, if there is no official feast day today, can I still eat food today? Of course you can. Oh, man. Yes, you can feast still. It's still Easter. Even if it's not a feast day, it is still within the season of Easter. Even more reason to celebrate. Midwest Sports says, hail, hail to you. Thank you very much for being here. Snow Golem says, it's cool. Streaming is not easy setup. I forget things all the time after starting a job. Yeah, absolutely. Matsuin, what is going on? Hail to you. Ryan Liu says, what are you going to watch in May? Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, The Fall Guy, or the new Mad Max? I'm kind of done with Planet of the Apes. Doesn't mean I'm not going to see it necessarily. I thought the Caesar trilogy was good. I thought that each film got better, though I do think the second film in that franchise is probably my favorite of the three. And the one thing I will say about the trailer is, and it really shows you why anytime people mention, oh, well, it's just a trailer, so the effects aren't going to be perfectly rendered. Just watch any trailer for this movie. I mean, the effects look phenomenal, and I am the CGI stickler. Like, I am very... I am a stickler for CGI, especially bad CGI, which is why I oftentimes go after the MonsterVerse films, because I'm sorry, CGI fest. But the Planet of the Apes films look phenomenal. Like, again, even the trailers, the effects look great. So I'm kind of intrigued by that aspect, but I'm also, I don't like when these films franchise like that. I just like, no, the three, kind of like that reboot of the franchise was cool. I just think it's a little too soon and too close to the end of the Caesar trilogy, for me at least. So it's not on my top list of things I want to see, but who knows? If I hear good things about it, maybe I'll put that in my list. Fall Guy looks like fun, so I probably will see that. And the new Mad Max Furiosa, it's okay. Well, first off, Ryan, I got to correct you. It's not a Mad Max movie. It's a Furiosa movie. You can say all you want, but it says in the title it's a Mad Max movie because it's in the Mad Max saga. Doesn't change the fact. This is where me and Tom Connors, we disagree on a lot of things, but we agree on this point that Mad Max Fury Road was not a Mad Max movie because he was a side character in a movie with him in the title. That was a Furiosa movie. And guess what? Furiosa gets another movie. And I am very much a fan of Anya Taylor-Joy, who thank goodness she is playing Furiosa this time around and not that insane woman, Charlize Theron. Who, again, verifiably insane and an abusive parent to her children. If you know anything about how she's raising her children, it's insane. I digress there, but still, it needs to be said. So I think that when it comes to that movie, I want to see it because I want to see Anya Taylor-Joy, but there's really no other reason for me to want to watch it because the effects really don't look that good. When Fury Road's trailer came out, I remember just being like, whoa, this looks really cool. And I see how they're trying to replicate a lot of the same shots or very similar looking shots. But I don't know what changed between Fury Road and this movie. The trailers are night and day. The trailers for this movie are just don't look good. They really don't. The effects look really bad. So I'm kind of hesitant to watch it for that reason, but probably of the ones you've just mentioned, Fall Guy probably is the one I'm most anticipating. Let's see. Rob D says, hello, Odin just ordered a bunch of DC animated movies on Blu-ray since HBO Max dropped 80% of their DC library this month. If it wasn't on the family plan, I would have dropped HBO Max. Yeah. And how dare you dead name them, Rob D? It's just Max now, don't you know? But yeah, I mean, and what's interesting is that all the reports that I've heard, at least, is that Max is doing well comparatively to the other streaming services, right? Disney Plus has yet to be profitable. It's supposed to be profitable by this year. We'll see if that happens. But I think that when Valiant Renegade and many of the other, shout out to him, have ever talked about the streaming services, Max usually is one of the better performing ones. But when you think about where Max is coming from, they're coming from the legacy of HBO, which is why it's so stupid they dropped HBO from HBO Max. It's like that is literally your brand. That is such an important part of your brand, and it's stupid. It would be like if Disney Plus dropped Disney and just called itself Plus. Hey, do you got Plus? You got Plus? Because like, oh, you got Max? You got Max? Max what? And not to mention, it connects it to a much more nefarious part of their history when you think about it. But I look and see what they're coming from, which is the huge success of HBO. I mean, HBO really is a pioneer in many ways, right? Because that was providing that extra paid premium content for a long time. I mean, you think about the Sopranos, you think Game of Thrones, and how Game of Thrones in many ways, if I'm not mistaken, Game of Thrones kind of bridged the gap between being exclusive on the channel HBO, which you had to have a subscription to, and then eventually the online HBO service, HBO Go. Like, it was kind of in the either the very beginning of HBO Go at the time, or HBO Go started at some point in the seasons of that show. So they were a pioneer in many ways, right? Getting things ready. Like, they were able to deal with a lot of the issues. I remember when we would try to watch the new season, when Game of Thrones was good, right? We would try to watch the new season, my brother and I, and we'd always be so frustrated because it would be like crashing because there were so many people trying to access it. Well, guess what? That was experience that they got to learn early on. And so it makes sense whenever people say that Max is one of the better performing ones because, yeah, they've got that history of getting a huge jump start. It's kind of like where Netflix is also seen as being one of the better services as far as functionality and as far as profitability is concerned because of just how they also were at the starting block of it too. So for those two to be at the front and then for places like Disney Plus to be very far behind and Paramount Plus to be basically on the decline on the way out, it is not too surprising to hear that. But yeah, that's why physical media is the way to go. Physical media, and now it's Synology has in conjunction with what's it called? Beehive or something similar to that. The name B is in the name. But you can get a pretty low-cost server that can store a ton of things. And you can create your own Netflix, essentially, from home. And there's other brands out there. I think Ugreen, for instance, which is a more cheap brand, is starting to have its own NAS launch soon, too. And storage, of course, is always just going to be the biggest cost when it comes to server space. But if you think about in the long run how much you tend to spend on streaming services, it's worth having the physical media. And I know many people out there are like, I'd rather just sail the high seas. Okay, you do you, boo. But I do think there is something about having the highest quality version of a movie, of a show, that you can also at the same time stream from the luxury of your own home without having to even put a disc in, right? I think that there's merits in both for sure. All right, 734, King and Rumsky says, does King Kong have his own MonsterVerse? To my knowledge, it's just the MonsterVerse, and both Godzilla and King Kong are the main stars of it. CM Chunk, what is going on, brother? Bruce hanging out as well. Prince Green here saying, how am I supposed to get receipts from a vending machine? Says Prince Green, quoting Ludacris. Interesting. Oh, man. Let's see. Jim Watson, what's going on? Master of Gaming. Tad to say, will you see Monkey Man? Initially, I was thinking about it, but then apparently there's some kind of like trans allegory with it. I don't know how true that is, but it's like I have no interest in seeing that if that's the case. Hardwick, what are your thoughts on the upcoming A24 movie Civil War? I've been waiting. I think that Film Threat, shout out to Chris Gore, who invited me on his channel last night for his Versus. It was Immaculate versus The Omen. And I didn't see either film because I explained this on the stream. I try and stay away. One, I generally don't like horror films in general, but also I try to stay away from anything that deals with the demonic. It's just better not to go there mentally. and so I try to stay away from it. I mentioned that only because he was going to go see an early screening of Civil War. And what he had been hearing was that in the movie, the media is the villain, kind of. So I'm waiting to hear back. I don't know if he has posted his review of the movie yet. And so when he has, I'll make sure to check it out. Basically, if he's able to give a little bit more context, because Alex Garland, who directed and wrote the movie, has a very mixed track record, right? He made Ex Machina, which is a movie I adore. I mean, I've got my issues with it, of course, because of, you know, the sexuality stuff in there. But overall, it's a very well thought out, thought provoking movie. And it has a lot of really deep stuff. And the CGI is fantastic, especially for the money that was spent on it at the time. But then he went on to make Annihilation, which was garbage. And then he went on to make that film Men, which just the trailer alone made me want to gag. So who knows? And one of the only things I was excited about for this movie was Jesse Plemons. And apparently he's in one scene, which made me sad because he's therefore only in that one scene that is in the trailer. So, yeah, I don't know. I'll have to wait and see what his thoughts are, though. But I think it is homework this week. So I do have I do have a ticket to go see that on Thursday. But whether I'm going to be excited to see it or not is going to be dependent on what I hear. Abomination, what's going on, brother? Thanks for hanging out over on Odyssey. Says, I might have missed your review of Godzilla X Kong. No, I just haven't seen it because I just don't want to. But just in case I saw it, please refresh my memory. What's your opinion on the subterranean South Hell earthen slave trade? Ah, yes. Ah, yes, Abomination. It all makes sense now. Oh, man. That took a lot of effort. I bet you had to look over that several times just to check for spelling and other things. Your average Patriot nerd, what's going on? Laura, the Modern Major General story. What's going on? Welcome back. Glad to have you here. Please drive safe. Thanatos Felicitas, what's going on? Hyper and X13 in the chat. Hello, Odin. Hope all is well. Got to see The Godfather re-released last Sunday and had a blast. Audience atmosphere was great as well. I mean, it's one of the all-time greatest films. So what else can be said about it, right? So, hey, congratulations on being able to see that on the big screen. Definitely think that would be a good time if I had the time and the ability to go see that. All right, taking a break from the chat for a second. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the box office. All right, so first off, here is the official chart of OMB Reviews. This is the chart I use on my box office breakdowns and the chart that is posted over on my website, ombreviews.com. First off, interesting fact here, Civil War is coming out this weekend, and it has a reported budget of $50 million, meaning it has to make around $125 million plus, so some place probably between $125 and $200 million worldwide to break even. There's no real indication on where the film is currently tracking, at least according to the places that I tend to use. I think I've heard some report that it might be in the $10 to $20 million range, which, okay, yeah, you got a long way to go on a film that's probably not going to do anything internationally, if I had to guess, and most of it's going to be coming domestically. So we'll have to wait and see. And it's also going to be going up against a very strong Godzilla X Kong. And I just want to make that very clear, especially to the people that only hear every other word I say and misconstrue the things that I say. Right now, Godzilla X Kong is doing well, right, on paper. So according to the numbers, the latest box office update for the film is that it's sitting around $362 million. Now, using a standard metric, which my chart uses, right, a 2.5 multiplier, that means the film theoretically would have already have made $15.2 million. Now, many people have pointed out in the past saying, well, the box office is a bit different now, right? The deals between studios and theaters is different, and you also sometimes fail to account for when movies make more money internationally where the return is a lot less than the domestic. That's why I have developed my own what I call random crazy charting. And it's only given that name not because of any connection to accuracy, but rather because it just drove me insane getting all of these things together and getting my metrics together. If you see the way that I handle charts and and equations, sometimes it makes me want my head want to explode. There's a lot of other things I would love to do with this chart. I would love this chart to be twice as big, but then my brain would just probably just turn into complete mush instead of just the partial mush that it is now. But using this metric, okay, the reported budget for Godzilla X Kong was around $135 million. That is much lower than every other film. Now, these other budgets that are posted are not adjusted for inflation. So Godzilla 2014, in real money, cost probably over $200 million to make. Kong Skull Island, also, when adjusted for inflation, probably also over $200 million. Over $200 million for King of the Monsters, over $200 million, probably not as much, but still over for Godzilla versus Kong, okay? So the break-even point for this movie, right, is going to be a lot lower. Now, typical marketing cost would mean the film cost overall $202.5 million. Some might argue that it actually probably costs more because marketing on that movie may have been a bit higher than what you would typically see for a movie that cost. That could be true. I like to try to use standards. And typically, a film's total cost is its budget times 1.5. Because normally, you take half the budget, add that on top of the budget, and that's typically what your marketing plus budget ends up being. So in this case, 202.5. Now, so far, according to the numbers, as of this stream, it's made around $135 million domestically. Now, let me go ahead and just make sure that's still correct. So 136, so it's updated just a little bit, but close enough to where I don't have to drive myself crazy trying to copy and paste the new number in there. So roughly $135 million domestic. It has also made about $226 million internationally. 226.5 right there. Now you'll say, wait a minute, but that's not what's in that category, right? You just said 226. Why do I see 133? Ah, because this is the international box office without China. Remember, international movies for studios get about 40%, right? So the studios get 40% of the box office on average, typically, from international communities outside of the domestic market, outside of North America. And so 40% is what they get in return. Whereas in China, they only get 25%. I've mentioned this now several times, even in this stream, that when it comes to Godzilla, when it comes to Dune, any project that Legendary, the production company, is a part of, they are now owned by a group called the Wanda Group. You might have heard them before because the Wanda Group, at one point in time, actually owned majority stock or whatever it was called in AMC Theaters. I believe they finally got rid of that when AMC stock was tanking because of the coup and stuff. So they're the ones that are now the stakeholders, the owners of Legendary. So many have speculated because even the CEO or the head chairman of the Wanda Group has said that when it comes to how much Legendary gets from their box office, that, as he says, it's better than 25%. We want more than 25%. We're going to get more than 25%. That is the only thing I have been able to find, though, as far as any idea of what the metric is. So at no point has he or anyone else said, ah, we get 40% of the box office, or we get 60% of the box office. So because the only thing I have is it's more than 25%, that's not a lot to go on. So therefore, in this charting, right, I have 133.8 is all other countries other than China, and that's set to 40%, okay? Whereas it's made around $92.2 million in China, and that is 25%. Again, until there can be something confirmed and verified otherwise for a different metric, this is what we have to go on. Using these metrics, you can see that's a lot of money coming, right? So you have 130 million domestically, around 130 million internationally outside of China. And then China, you have almost $100 million. So a little less than a third of the entire box office for Godzilla X Kong has come from China. And I always say for all other movies, that's never a good thing when the majority of your money is coming from China because you get so much less return on investment. So if you take these into account, again, roughly 55% or so domestically for that cut of what the studios get from theaters, 40% internationally, Would you get, again, studios will get 40% from theaters. And then 25% for China. That means right now, as of this video, based on the metrics we have that can be confirmed, the movie's actually at $51 million in the red. Now, I'm also going to say, because again, some people, especially with the cult mentality, just go off the rails at that point when I mention that, it hasn't made its money back yet. Of course it has, blah, blah. Calm down. Now, do I think it's going to break even, make money? Absolutely. At this point, it is marching in a very good direction, right? As I mentioned in my own box office charting here, right? So this is when you don't have to worry about the China number, because this is just based off of worldwide history, okay? Because of the fact it had 361 million by the end of its second weekend, I can project it's going to make worldwide between $515 and $722 million. Now, that's going to be a very good endpoint, just as a bit of a comparison between the other MonsterVerse films, okay? When adjusted for inflation, very important factor here, Godzilla 2014, around $698 million. King of the Monsters, around $451. Godzilla vs. Kong, around $477. So right now, Godzilla X Kong is on pace to easily pass Godzilla vs. Kong and King of the Monsters, and it has a chance to even potentially beat the adjusted number for Godzilla 2014. Now, if it does that, that's going to be very impressive. What's also going to be interesting is, what does the average ticket sale look like for this movie? Will this film be able to hold a candle to the 2014 or not? The most interesting part of all of this, of course, is this battle we see right now internationally, right? Because where Godzilla X Kong is really thriving is domestically. 136 is already a lot higher, right? 30 million higher than Godzilla versus Kong, and is already also higher than King of the Monsters from back in 2019, right? And so these are all things, and I just realized I think I still have one. Ah, that's right. I thought there was another one missing. Kong Skull Island. Okay. People forget about that one sometimes. Okay. So that film is actually the next movie it has to also be able to take over, because Kong Skull Island, adjusted for inflation, was around $674 million worldwide. Now, it has not been able to pass the domestic for Kong Skull Island, but I think it will. Right now, it's at $130 million. I think it'll definitely get past $200 million domestic. Does it get past $472 million international? That I'm not sure of yet. Is it possible? Yes, absolutely. Again, you look at the metrics here historically, that $722 million is a possibility. $618 million on average is also a possibility too. But right now, where the movie is sitting right now, it looks like it'll be the third highest grossing film in the MonsterVerse franchise. So again, you're talking about it getting back to where it was prior to King of the Monsters. King of the Monsters was a bad, oh man. Again, all the MonsterVerse films, in my opinion, have been bad. I mean, Kong Skull Island was garbage. Brie Larson, just so much more than that, but goodness gracious. But most MonsterVerse fans even will say, oh yeah, things kind of fell off a bit, right? Because you can't blame COVID for King of the Monsters only doing $451 million worldwide, right? That's a very bad number, especially when you look at what the two previous films had done. So this would be a return, right? This would be a return to being very close to both Godzilla 2014 and Kong Skull Island. But at the same time, the question is it going to be able to sustain that? Is it going to be able to continue on after the fact? Who knows? There's a lot of factors that could be leading to this movie, specifically this movie, doing well at this specific time in history. But we'll have to wait and see. Apparently, this movie is a huge tonal shift from the previous film. That very well could be what are bringing people out to go see it. But what say you? All right, Orange Hat at 742 says, secretly plotting to overthrow Odin because he hates the MonsterVerse and he doesn't know I am Loki in disguise. Wait, did I type that out? Walks away whistling, joking. Mm-hmm, sure. Hyperin says, Odin, what do you think of Minus One possibly getting a sequel? I honestly think it's better as a standalone. I agree. I am much more of a fan of when films are able to stand on their own. I think Godzilla Minus One is a very special film for a lot of reasons. Now, if they were able to get the same team behind a sequel And if it was well thought out, then maybe it could work, right? That's a lot of ifs, though. That's a lot of factors that would have to be able to be matched in order for that to happen. And usually it doesn't happen that way, right? So if it was me, I would say let minus one stand. I wouldn't mind, though, if they wanted to use the same Godzilla. So that I guess is where it gets a little tricky too, right? You could theoretically have a sequel where it's the same Godzilla concept, but it's different actors, it's a different story, it's years later. That, I think, would maybe be the way to kind of like split the baby, as it were. The wiser decision would be instead to say, all right, we're going to use the same Godzilla concept design, but we're going to have this take place at a different point in history with different characters. That to me is, I think, where Godzilla can shine, because then you could potentially bring in, you know, a different monster from the history of Godzilla. And I would actually really enjoy that, or I could potentially enjoy that, because if you were able to do a Godzilla minus one with the same design, which was brilliant and just so beautifully designed for Godzilla minus one, but take that and then bring in some iconic Godzilla monsters to fight. The reason why I'm excited to hear that just as a prospect is because I would want that to happen, just because if they could somehow recapture the same kind of magic that they had for Godzilla minus one, and yet also show, hey, we can even do the Monsterverse better, we can also do battles better between giant monsters, that would get me excited, because then it would be like, okay, literally no need for the Monsterverse at this point. I already feel that way, but is what it is. Unnokes. I never know how to say that. Never know. Hardwick says, did you see the interview where the Noriko actress said that if there's a Godzilla Minus One sequel, she might be the one stomping on buildings? No, I did not. Prince Green, Fall Guy has pretty good word of mouth. Sounds like an action romance movie both men and women can enjoy. Hey. Definitely think a lot of people would be happy to hear that. Let's see. Luke Zuda said, Toho and Legendary might announce stuff at Godzilla Day. I hope Toho does. I'm totally fine if Legendary just hangs up the towel now. There's no need for that. No need for that at all. Luke Zilla, the budget for The Fall Guy is apparently $125 million. Yeah, when we're a little bit closer to that film, I'll be able to post that. All right, Steve at 746, what's up, brother? We got to talk about WrestleMania 40. What was the highlight for you for day one, and especially day two? Is wrestling back to being awesome? It is definitely back on my radar, more so than it has been in previous years and weeks. When I saw the video of Stephanie McMahon saying, welcome to a new era, welcome to the Paul Levesque, you know, Paul Triple H Levesque era of WWE, I said, okay. Yeah, I mean, you kind of forget how much the shadow of Vince McMahon haunted that business for years. And it really is, because if you think about last year, what happened, right? My wife and I, and again, my wife just could not care less about wrestling, right? She's not a wrestling fan by any means. She puts up with it, right? When she started dating me, she was like, oh, you're a wrestling fan? That's cute. So she's kind of like put up with me. And she's on occasion watched, because I was watching and would ask questions and stuff. She watched WrestleMania. She actually watched both nights, most of WrestleMania with me both nights. And again, that's when you know it's love, right? But even she was like starting to like at least understand and appreciate of, okay, yeah, I could see why, especially guys can get into it. And it was one of those things too, where she especially got moved by the entire finish the story narrative with Cody Rhodes. And so much so that I told her that there was a documentary about him, and we've been watching the documentary. We got halfway through the documentary last night, actually. And so that was really cool to see that. Now, when thinking about the highlights, I mean, I think honestly the Cody win is absolutely the biggest highlight. But to be honest, and my wife and I were both in agreement on this, a lot of the men's matches during both nights weren't very good. Especially that ladder match. I'm usually a big fan of those because I feel like normally there's some pretty cool spots, but I don't know what it was about this one. The ladders, you could just tell how fake they were. I mean, at one point you see a ref grab one of the wrestlers saying don't climb this ladder. It's not the right ladder. And you could see the leg was starting to break off because it was one of the breakable ladders. And it was okay. Kind of takes you out of it. Whereas one of the better matches was the Io Sky versus Bayley match was really good. Heck, even the tag team match where you had Bianca Belair and that whole crew together, that was actually a better match. And usually the women's matches are some of the worst matches on the card. And yet they were a lot better than a lot of the guys' matches. So, yeah, I have to definitely say the Cody match for sure. Finishing the story. And it was also really cool listening to the press conference after. I think it's cool that they're starting to do those. It kind of brings things down a bit. And yeah, definitely interested and wanting to watch more. Fetigator, what's going on, brother? Says, sorry if you have mentioned this, but have you been watching Shogun? It's beautifully shot, an absolute great show. It will win many awards. Oh, it absolutely will. I have been watching it, and I like it for the most part. I know that I'm a stickler for this too, but I'm sorry. The sex and nudity scenes, even though it's very, there's maybe two or three in the entire series, they're just so unnecessary. And people say, why does that get on you? Why does that matter to you so much? Because when a creator is making a show and they're thinking about, okay, how do we tell this story? If at any point that comes up in their mind of, oh, we got to have this, that immediately will make me question everything else about the show. Because the same person that's creating all these really awesome scenes also presented that garbage. And so it's always going to, it's always going to bother me when they do that. But still, the Shogun is a very, very well-made show. Acting is great. I do think that the guy who's playing the white Protestant, I think that he fits his role, but I do think his acting is a little bit overdone to me. The voice that he's doing and the way he's presenting his character, part of me is he's just chewing the scenery, as it's often said. So I'm not really wild about him necessarily. I think he's overacting a bit. But everyone else is phenomenal. Everyone else does a great job. But yeah, overall, I'm digging it. Let's see. Steven had to say, were you satisfied Undertaker to save the day? I mean, it was a great choice, but honestly, Stone Cold would have been better. Yeah, I mean, a lot of that was really confusing. Now that I'm re-watching the Cody documentary, it actually makes more sense because I had forgotten that Taker was interviewed. I had forgotten that Cena was interviewed. But a lot of the people that are in the Cody interview were a part of what happened at the main event. I was honestly just in shock because I thought Taker had just completely retired. And I thought that if you were going to do any angle with him where he's, stepping out of retirement, that's the way to do it, right? Not a full entrance. He's not in ring gear. It's just him showing up, doing one choke slam, disappearing. But I could have done without it too. I think, yeah, Stone Cold, I would have liked to have seen too, but Abomination says, wouldn't want to call it Box Office Max, the amount of, or BO Max, the amount of mocking they would get from people saying Body Odor Max. Yeah, that would definitely be the case. Let's see. Wayward Noodle says, Ryan at G&G reported today that the American Society of Magical Blank pulled the movie from all theaters already. Did you hear this? I didn't because I don't care. I saw that Ryan had posted a video and I'm like, why are you still talking about this movie? No one has seen it. I mean, it must be doing well for him algorithm-wise, but I don't know why it's doing well algorithm-wise. Because no one's seeing it. Why? If no one's seeing it, that means no one's talking about it. So why are we even still making it a thing? And with that one too, we still don't even have a projected budget. So it's hard to even quantify whether that makes it a flop or not. Because we don't have actual data. We can make guesses, and it's definitely a fact that it's not doing well. I mean, it's being pulled from theaters already and only made a whopping, what, $2 million? Maybe. So I don't know why he's doing it though. And Wayward Noodle, don't double post things, please. Forever Sci-Fi, hail to you. Your average Patriot Nerds member says, I don't want to see the Fall Guy, even though I have a worry about it, that he is just going to be subject to another Hollywood girl boss, another bait and switch, that Fall Guy won't be the hero. It's always a possibility, and with the people involved, it definitely could happen. But yeah, and that's why we live in an age, I think, where even more so now, people are going to be waiting to hear what Chris Gore, Film Threat, have to say about it, what Gary Nerdrotic has to say about it, what Critical Drinker, especially, more so than probably anyone else, has to say about it. And that's why you look at what he had to say about Godzilla X Kong, he did not have kind things to say. He kind of ended it by saying, okay, oh yeah, whatever, it is what it is. But if you listen to his review, it is very clear that the movie's just not good. So, you know, how much sway that has, I don't know. But by the fact that we know people even in Hollywood watch his videos, listen to him, seems like he has a lot more sway and a lot more swagger than people would potentially indicate, right? So, let's see. Steve is everywhere. Nice says, how would you plan out SummerSlam? This is not really a wrestling show, man. So I was happy to talk about WrestleMania as far as initial reactions, but I'm not going to do anything more with that. It's not an open forum night, and we typically don't do wrestling talk here anyway, except for the random comment. Let's see. Hardwick, Anya Taylor-Joy is too tiny and delicate to pull off a post-apocalyptic action heroine convincingly. They should have skipped Furiosa and made Chris Hemsworth's character the star. No, they shouldn't have, because he's actually the biggest issue I have with it, because he's just Thor. Like, literally when the first trailer came out, I said, why is Chris Hemsworth just dressed like a ragtag Thor? It's not very well thought out costuming and makeup design for his character. Cause I'm like, I don't care what his name is going to be. I'm just like, oh, that's Thor. What's Thor doing in this movie, guys? It's not because it's the same actor. It's because he literally looks like what Thor looks like in the MCU. And I'm going to fight back on that, because that's not always the case. You can have smaller actresses that can still pull it off. And if anyone can pull it off, I think Anya Taylor-Joy can, because she is a very talented actress. Britz Green, in addition to the aforementioned allegories, Monkey Man apparently has Christian bashing. That's never fun for me. No, thank you. See, Steven says, your thoughts on the Joker 2 teaser trailer. Low key, I hate it when they do teaser trailers for a trailer. Yeah, I haven't even seen it, and I probably won't. Abomination, if the media is the villain of Civil War, it sounds a lot like a small indie game called We Are What We Behold, although it's more of an interactive narrative than a game. Interesting. Master of Gaming, if you follow me for any length of time, and I know that you've been here for a long time, so why don't you listen? Yeah, I love Nefarious. I think Nefarious is great, and the reason why is because it's a much more realistic portrayal. It doesn't do the Hollywoodizing, but the reason why I would support a film like Nefarious and not a film like The Omen or others like it is because it's by having that Hollywoodized version where that's the image that sticks with you. And that's what I don't want. I would rather have a realistic portrayal, because it then makes it one where you can reasonably respond with a rejection, right? And so it's hard to put into words, but there is a difference between the two. Joker 2 trailer dropped. Okay. I'll have to watch it at some point. I'm going to be honest, I'm not that much anticipating it. I don't trust them. let's see. Mr. Roy, what is going on? Hail to you. Michael Burgett, what's going on? Had to say, I'm excited next month in theaters. They're doing showings of Thirst for episodes of the original Transformers TV show for 40th anniversary. Love cool stuff like that. Tickets going on sale tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, they kind of have to. They kind of have to go that direction. They don't really have a lot of original content to go with these days. General Wingster, whose member says, "This Saharan slave trade is getting old. Let's talk about the Eastern European Polish Slavic slave trade." Okay, that is interesting. Please make sure y'all smash that like button, light that fire button. Become a member today, and yeah, please support if you can. All right, let's jump back into the other part of the box office discussion tonight, and that is about Dune Part 2. So whereas on paper, we've just now confirmed, based on everything that we know, right, that Godzilla X Kong has not yet made its money back. If you take into account the cut from China and international, it's still about $50 million in the hole. Now, it's going to make it back, but it does also mean that the raw return on investment may not be as impressive as some might think, at least for the overall film. Dune is in a very similar situation, only it's on the much higher end at this point, and that is because this is also a film being distributed by Warner Brothers, but being produced by Legendary, right? So this is a very similar... It's a very similar deal, right, where I think 75% of the overall budget, meaning 75% of the overall profits, are going to be going to Legendary, 25% going to Warner Brothers, and then Warner Brothers is the distributor, gets some type of licensing fee, and therefore, because of that, Dune is going to be a, it's already in a much better position for, I mean, for Warner Brothers, it was a while ago making them money because of the way the splits worked. But for Legendary, this film also looks like it's going to be making some money for them as well, but not a whole lot of it, at least at this point, right? Because people see $665 million, that's really, really impressive. But I say nay, nay. We got to look at it within context, people. So let's go ahead and do that. So looking at the numbers, we know the film reportedly costs $190 million, right? This is Dune Part 2. Typical marketing would mean that overall cost would be about $285 million. Okay, we talked earlier about what typical marketing cost is on film. Seeing that it has made roughly $265 million as of this stream, just to go back, $265 right there, as you will see, domestically, of which the studio gets about 55% of the box office when all is said and done. Internationally, about $349 million without China, of which it gets about 40%. And then about $46.3 million in China, of which it gets about 25%. We've talked about, doesn't matter what you say or what you think, nothing has been confirmed of any different type of number or take on behalf of Legendary. So we got to go with what we know. With all that being taken into account, and because of that massive budget, that means right now the film has only netted about $12.4 million. Now, as I mentioned, Warner Brothers probably has seen a bit more because of the way in which the deal has worked. Legendary has seen a little bit of profit now from the film too. With all that being said, the movie is slowing down. All right. I think that at this point, it is going to be able to cross into that $700 million space. I think that's definitely a possibility for the film. I think right now it is tracking in that direction. But let's go ahead and compare this to another film, which it had some early connections with, and that's Oppenheimer, right? Many people said, hey, it had a better opening domestic than Oppenheimer did, right? 82.5 versus 82.4. Oppenheimer, though, had some insane level holds. Now, whereas Dune Part 2 has some strong holds, they were not insane level holds. And so that's why Oppenheimer's domestic ended at 329 and its international ended at 640. There's no way the international for Dune is getting to 640. Just saying that right now. There's a chance it gets closer to 300 million, maybe gets closer to that 329. But even that is not fully known at this point because, as I said, it has been tracking to do just again, it's been tracking a little bit less, right? So if you look at the overall weekend performances, it's now making about, probably by next weekend, it'll be down to 5 million or so. And if you add 5 million to that, that's 270. And then it's that law of diminishing returns. We're going to have an April that's going to be relatively slow. But then once May hits, we're off to the races. So basically, it looks like what we're seeing is the film just slowly edge out. So it's still dropping pretty well, right, in the 30s. That's a very strong hold. And so that's why I do think it could end up eking out to $300 million. But to get to $329 million, I just don't see that happening based on the numbers that we're seeing right here weekend to weekend. Looking at the daily box office, you can see that the film has actually already, now for the first time, dropped below $1 million. That's always a big thing. Normally when a film, in the typical span of its run, it's been out for almost 40 days, so it's been out for a long time now, right? And so the fact that it is now making under $1 million a day, it's also being dropped from theaters, it's at 2,800 screens now, it means right now it's basically on its way out. And also you can even see that, right? 75%, 63%. Like you look at these and you can see, okay, these are pretty good, consistent numbers. And you have to go back a little bit to see something even close to that. But really, these are the largest we've seen so far, right? As far as what the percentage from the day, percentage from the week. So same time last week, 63% off. Same, or rather, the previous day, 75% off. So this film is on the way out domestically. The question mark is going to be how much gas does it have left in the tank internationally. But based on what we're seeing, this is the weekly performance, by the way. So that means just, you know, Monday through the end of the week, opened $111 million. And then the next week, $65 million, $39, $25, $16. So again, that law of diminishing returns is setting in. So what do I think is going to happen? I think $300 million domestic is definitely a possibility. Internationally, it is really hard to say at this point. Maybe 450. What does that mean? I think this film probably can get to $700 million. But right now, I think, and I think I've said this now for a very long time, I thought from the beginning, based on the numbers that we were getting, that we were probably going to see the film get somewhere in that $700 to $800 million range. Now, let's go ahead and go back to the chart, because again, this was from a while ago at this point. Right, it had $367 million by the end of the second weekend. At the time, I had projected it to make somewhere between $525 and $735. So clearly, it is doing better than the average projection, right? The average was $630. It's at $665. So that is definitely on that higher end. Will it get upwards, though, of being twice as much as what it was 2 weeks in? I don't know if it gets that high. So fact is, it's doing well. It's going to make some profit, but it's not going to be very high profits, right? So again, looking at the most conservative estimate, that would have it be around, like, what, $125 million in profits? But remembering, okay, a lot less money from China, usually a lot less money internationally, probably looking at maybe between $50 and $100 million in profit. So again, that's good. You're broken even, you make some profits, but when you spent $190 million on it, $50 to $100 million in profit is not enough to invest in the next movie. Now, I know that they've already announced that they're going to do one, right? And again, Warner Brothers is going to be in a very different situation financially because of the way that things work with Legendary. The question that I always ask is, where in the heck is Legendary getting its money from? Because I keep looking at all of the movies that they're involved with, and it does not make sense. What say you? All right. Forever Sci-Fi. I don't watch the demonic movies outside of something like Constantine. Play with the Ouija board or go anywhere near something trying channeling. Best not to tempt fate. Exactly. It's better just to stay away from that nonsense. I also would watch Constantine. Hyper says, random to say, but after seeing Dune and Godfather, I couldn't help but draw parallels between Michael and Paul in terms of tragedy. Who do you think had more of a tragic legacy? Depends on whether you mean the movie or the book. I've not read the book for The Godfather, so I can't speak to that one. But I know Tina, shout out to Tina, I believe she was the one that said consistently that the movie for The Godfather is better than the book. And again, obviously everyone's going to have a different opinion on those things. But if we're comparing the movie The Godfather, which I do know, to either the book version of Paul or the movie version of Paul, I would say, movie-wise, Godfather, hands down, as far as tragedy is concerned. Absolutely. Because there are so many key things in Paul's story that they don't do in the movie. You know, they don't give him, you know, in the book, Paul and Chaney have a child. And Paul loses his child. That's tragedy, right? They don't have that. You know, and that's why I have so many problems with the Dune movie, right? With the second film adaptation, for a lot of different reasons, especially the changes to Chaney. I've talked about that at length now here on the channel. Now, if we're talking about the book, because there are those extra things, I would probably still lean Michael, but not nearly as much. Again, there's very different tragedies that are happening in their lives. And again, we're just talking about the first movie. The whole scope of the movie, of the movies? Oh, yeah, Michael Corleone, hands down. I mean, you think about that scene in part two where Diane Keaton has that infamous scene saying, "I had an..." And you're like, whoa, evil, but also, oh my gosh. Let's see. Physics chatted with Kenny Lee. What is going on? Hail to you. Your average patriot nerd says, "It's sad to hear that the communists own Legendary now. Bummer." Agreed. Completely agreed. Rob D says, "But Odin, I read from Wikipedia that China gives 100% of box office receipts to the studio. Xi Jinping is totally cool with it." Ah, yes, of course. The ever-reliable Wikipedia and China. Now, if that means that they get 100% because they are a part of the Chinese Communist Party, I then have to say, but how much of it's really going to them versus how much of it's going to the party? Because I still think it ends up being about the same. Oh, man. Hardwick, I read an early review of Civil War on a forum. Apparently, news media is portrayed as almost exterminated, and the protagonists are among the few surviving reporters. Ah, that would seem to indicate it would be the opposite. Unless the reason why they've been exterminated is because they were the bad guy. Maybe it's one of those films where people read into it. Michael Burgett says, Warner Brothers just announced at their CinemaCon presentation that the new Christopher Reeve documentary, Superman, is getting a theatrical release in September. Nice. Very cool. Call Jagos, what's going on? Snowglob says, thanks for putting your brain beans under stress watching the movies for us. I try. Master Gaming, since the first Omen released, what are your thoughts on unplanned... Master of Gaming, how are those films connected and relevant to each other? I like how you're like, all right, because this movie has released, what do you think about this completely unrelated movie? I'm very confused by that. Snow Golem, I couldn't stand Jack Black in Skull Island. Thank goodness I didn't pay for that ticket. There was a lot of problems with Skull Island. Let's see. Abomination says, looks like Skull Island movie did very well, unlike the Skull Island game, which is objectively garbage tier. Well, the movie was garbage tier too. In fact, I would argue that much of the reason as to why, because we've seen this happen historically, right? Godzilla 2014, $600, almost $700 million when you adjust. Kong Skull Island does $674, so a little bit less. And then you go to King of the Monsters, and that drops all the way down to $451. I honestly think a part of it is because King of the Monsters was garbage, but also I think Kong Skull Island left a lot of people mad, myself included. Let's see. Abomination said, Odin, would Godzilla Minus One sequel be called Godzilla Minus Zero or Godzilla Minus Two? That is the ultimate question. Now, Snow Golem adds to that saying it would be Godzilla Minus Pi. Love some pie. Luke Zilla, Yamazaki has said he would bring in another monster if Minus One got a sequel. Those are the movies they should be making. Because they're actually good, and they don't cost a lot. So, you save money, you make money, because as we've just shown, right, return on investment, probably not too far off from one another, if we're being honest. And you don't have to deal directly with the Chinese Communist Party either. So, it's a win-win-win in many ways. It's a win for human rights. It's a win in spending and profitability. There really is no reason for them to continue on. CM Junk, Skull Island is my favorite of the MonsterVerse. How dare you disparage? CM Junk, I think you're being a little extra chunky today. General Wingster, Freya loves it when Odin puts on. No, never. Jeremy Zukowski, only a few kaiju candidates that could fit in minus one sequel. It's either Mothra or Anguirus. Mothra is very popular in Japan, and Anguirus is Ankylosaurus and fan favorite outside of the big five. What's so funny is that I now know so many more of the MonsterVerse monster, not MonsterVerse monsters. I guess the classical MonsterVerse. I don't know what you would call it outside of like the Warner Brothers garbage films. But outside of the pantheon of Godzilla monsters, I guess that would be a better way of saying it. Because there is a 20-minute video on YouTube, and it's called like Godzilla Through the Years, Godzilla Through the Ages. And it's cut together with all the different versions of Godzilla and a bunch of the different monsters. And it has like the different themes and scores. And Baby Thor somehow watched it. I think we had been watching something, like there was a Toy Trucks video or something one day. And then he saw it randomly got recommended. Actually, no, I know what it is now. He had seen the poster behind me for Godzilla Minus One. So again, good Godzilla right here next to even better Mother of Us All. Hail Mary. Ave Maria. But next to her and behind her, because again, can't be in front of Our Lady, Godzilla Minus One. So my son, Baby Thor, saw that. It was like, what's that? And I was like, oh, that's Godzilla. Zilla, what's that? So then that led to us, you know, talking about that. And then I showed him like a video of Godzilla roaring. He really liked that. And then randomly we find this 20-minute video that gets back to the video. And he watched it one time. And then he became obsessed with it because he kept saying like, what's that? What's that? What's happening? So now we've seen this video countless times. We just got him recently something called the Yoto, Y-O-T-O. And it's one of these things that is there to kind of like teach kids, one, it gives them a level of control because it plays music. It's also it's a way to try to take screen time away. Not that we do a lot of screen time because we don't let him watch anything during the week, only on weekends. And even then we try to have breaks and try to keep things balanced. But we got this Yoto to try to also help with that because it just plays music. And with the Yoto, it has this little like screen where it doesn't play anything. It just shows you like an image, like a little pixel art image essentially or something. And the last few days now he's been obsessed because I was able to get one of these make your own cards and play the music from it. And this kid, obviously we've seen a lot of times, but he also has a very good memory. He'll listen to the score and he'll tell you exactly what was happening on screen at that time. So he'll be like, oh, there's Anguirus. It's like, oh, there's Titanosaurus. And I was just like, oh my gosh, kid. Oh, there's Manila. But I've learned so many of these names because whenever we'd watch it, he'd start asking, who's that? Who's that? And I'd be like, I honestly don't know, right? I've only seen a handful of these. And so then I would pull up like the wikis and everything. And so then I'd be like, oh, that's Space Godzilla. Oh, that's, you know, that's one of my favorites, Destoroyah. Oh, that's Destoroyah. And so now I know so many more names from that universe than I would ever have thought I would ever want to know. Oh, man. It's been fun, though. 42 people still watching. Thank y'all. We're going to be wrapping things up here very soon. See, Luke Zilla says, I don't think Toho will close their deal with Legendary, at least not yet, since they have been satisfied with it. Again, financially, sure. Again, Toho is fine because they're getting money. I think that as far as decency and good filmmaking, they absolutely should cancel it. But that would require spine, etc. Gary Badger Sandwich. Hi, brother. What's going on, good sir? Hail to you. It's not as bad as Game of Thrones. Oh, absolutely. You are correct. And Rogue, I don't care if it's a part of historical context. There's some things you just don't need to show. It's amazing how far we've come from the you can just have the camera fade away and it's implied. You don't have to actually show it. Orange Hat says, courtesans did exist in all cultures. I understand why it bothers you. Odin, myself, now see 80s and 90s movies with the obligatory sex scenes as less than appealing. Yeah. And again, I go back to it, right? It's amazing that some of the best films ever made were made under the code era. And how once the code was lifted, we found ourselves with a lot of just degeneracy. We still see it today. And I think it's because now, more so than ever, people who are uncreative, people who lack creativity, will oftentimes go to that lowest common denominator. Because what's one way to make people laugh? Have some random guy fumble around saying the F word. It's lazy, but it makes people laugh sometimes. Some people just like hearing that. Some people think that's funny. How do you draw in a male audience? And typically, who are the most moviegoers, male audience, show some skin. And it's sad and it's disgusting. And it's, I think, a symptom of our society, but also it's a big problem within our society as well. So, but yeah, again, the Coruscant's being there is not the problem. It's the showing that you don't need. Again, completely unnecessary. That's what I'm talking about, right? Because the argument of, oh, well, historically it's relevant. Okay. Does it make the showing of any of it necessary by any means? There literally is no point. It serves no purpose except to either feed some sickness in the mind and the eyes of the people behind the camera, or to try to use that to poison the minds and the eyes of the people watching. Print screen. Henry Cavill would agree about unnecessary sex scenes in movies. Again, they're almost all unnecessary. Like, they're completely unnecessary. Showing them, like, let me just be clear. Showing any of them, absolutely no purpose whatsoever. Abomination says, it's Ryan's favorite title of all time. He has to talk about it. This is true. Hybrin, I heard if Yamazaki had plans for the Minus One sequel, it would draw inspiration from Princess Mononoke with Ashitaka's journey of his curse in that movie, similar to Noriko's from Minus One. Oh, nice. Okay. King Kane Rumsky says, did you ever watch the Fall Guy TV show from the 80s? If so, thoughts on Heather Tom? I have not, actually. Did not know that was a thing. Orange Chat, I had no interest in Ryan Gosling in his future movie since Barbie, but I saw the trailer for Fall Guy and also saw that David Leitch has a hand in it. So yeah, I'll give it a chance. I think Ryan Gosling's great. He's done a lot of really good films. Barbie was Barbie. Here's the thing though, Orange Chat, you gotta remember, all right? What is the best part of Barbie? I know that's a hard thing to say. It's a bit of a contradiction, but Ryan Gosling is the best part of that movie. Carl Jacobs, people want to hear that the Magical Society movie is failing, just like the Dial of Destiny, the failure represent. Here's the difference, though. Dial of Destiny is a massive franchise, had massive recognition, had massive company behind it, had all of those things going for it, so it makes sense for that to be talked about. I'm going to be honest, the only people that made the Society of Magical Blank relevant was Friday Night Tights. Have you heard almost anyone else talking about it other than the people within the Fellowship? I honestly think that we accounted for a huge portion of their box office. And based on the numbers, that's probably true. Oh, man. Let's see. Laura says, I'm looking forward to Fall Guy. I was a fan of the TV series and Gosling is hilarious. Okay, nice. All right, let's see, Harvick. Did you know that all the Spider-Man movies, Raimi, Webb, and Matt's, are getting re-released in theaters starting this month? I did not. Kind of mixed on it. I would love to see the first two Raimi films in theaters again. Can't say that for the others. Abomination, getting old, I'll have you know that I still reply with chicken butt whenever someone is unable to guess what. Michael Brigette, know you're excited about Mickey 17. Warner Brothers is showing it off at Comic-Con, Simonicon, and sounds like it was well-received by the exhibitors there. Yeah, I mean, I'm not like, it was on my anticipated. It was mostly because I thought, okay, the director is one where he's done some really good work before. Pattinson can be very, very good in specific roles. So it's one I'm definitely intrigued by. Was sad when it got bumped. Hyperin, if there was a Barbenheimer, would Godzilla X Kong and Ghostbusters be the new Frozen Empire? Better yet, a cooler movie idea would be the new Frozen Empire Strikes Back. Only Frozen Empire is bombing. Ghostbusters is not doing well at all. And it shouldn't be, because the movie's not good. And Godzilla X Kong is doing fine, but not doing Barbenheimer levels. Rob D, not sure if you know Odin, but the Godfather book is the first film and Vito's backstory from 2. Michael's story from 2 is entirely created for the film. Interesting. Hardaway, Jack Black wasn't in Kong Skull Island, though he was in Peter. I thought so. When he said that, I was like, you're thinking of Adrian Brody. Yeah, Adrian Brody was in. Or no, am I confusing myself? I only saw Kong Skull Island one time, and I hated it. Brie Larson was in it. That's pretty much all I remember. Rob D. Godzilla square root of 2 divided by 5x to the 7th power? Is that what that says? Print screen. Jack Black is consistently annoying in everything he's in. HyperX 13. Random fun. Choose your favorite. Father Vito Corleone, Darth Vader, Duke Leto Atreides, or Mufasa. Wow. Oh, my favorite father. Okay. Vito Corleone, Darth Vader, Duke Leto, Atreides, or Mufasa. Oh, Mufasa. I gotta go with Mufasa. The dude sacrificed. I mean, I say that, and yet there's a bit of sacrifice in almost all of them. Vito Corleone, not as much. But Vader, he, you know, turns away from the dark side to save his son. Duke Leto, obviously. No, I'm gonna go with Mufasa. Mufasa has the clearest. That's the kind of father I would want to be. Let's see. Laura says, ugh, Jackson's Kong has Snyder levels of unnecessary slow-mo. Yeah, I'm not a fan of Jackson's Kong. I know some people are. And I think that some people will at the very least admit that the I think it's the first half people agree sucks. The second half, once it actually gets more so into the story, I think that's the one that people enjoy. Honestly, I don't remember. Print screen and Top Gun Maverick is the perfect example of how to do a tasteful love scene. And even that one could have been less. Thanatos Felicitas says, one of the sexiest movies I have is How to Steal a Million, Peter O'Toole and Audrey Hepburn. The flirting was all over the place. Hardwick, I've seen fan edits that cut Peter Jackson's King Kong down to less than 2 hours and remove the CGI excess, but they can't fix the miscasting of Jack Black and Adrian Brody. Andrew Hayes, I'm wondering if you found Dune 2 boring at all. I fell asleep in the middle of the movie. Yeah, the second act dragged quite a bit. So to a certain degree, yes. There's a lot of things I like. I think there's some beautiful cinematography. It's a film that deserves to be studied. But the story, yeah. Print screen. Sex scenes are not required for a sexy movie. Hayley Atwell is effortlessly in Mission Impossible 7. And she never wears a revealing outfit. No, yeah. Just proving the point. Hyper and X13. I agree. I feel they cut out so much from the book context. Dune, they even cut out so much of Thufir Hawit's role. I don't even think they even mentioned the word Mentat. If they did, I remember. Yeah, I mean, I think they mentioned it in the first movie, but you're right. It's not. And then he's completely cut from the second film. No reference to him whatsoever. He just disappears. So, but I'm gonna go back to it because people will talk about that. People talk about how Stilgar is changed. The changes to Stilgar, though, aren't as far-fetched to me, right? It's a change, and so I validate anyone who has issues with it. But it's not like Chaney. Like Chaney's change is so drastic; it's a completely different character. Like there's nothing about that character that's similar. Like, at least with Stilgar, you do have, okay, yeah, he definitely has, he's a believer. There's a lot of faith that he has in him. But Kimberly G, a sexy movie for women, at least one of my favorites is Ocean's 11. Hot, well-dressed, smart men pulling off a sexy grade. Yeah, and that's what's so funny, because we talked about that, my wife and I, when we were watching WrestleMania, because she was like, it's like, yeah, I mean, can't really say much about the sexualization of women, because there's just as much sexualization of men in wrestling. It's like, yeah, it's equality. Forever Sci-Fi, one of those movies that leaves things is implied. It doesn't hurt the movie. It's Stardust. It has Charlie Cox, Henry Cavill, Michelle Pfeiffer. I actually like that movie a lot. I like that movie more than I think I should. It's a good book, too. But yes. No, one of my favorite implied ones, because it also leaves you kind of like, what happened, is Streetcar Named Desire. Right, when you have Brando's character, and you have him coming up, like, you know, coming up upon his wife's sister, and you know what's about to happen. And then what you get? You get the broken mirror, and then all you see is her pass out. And the implication is, like, he assaulted her, right? And you're just like, oh my gosh, like, such a heavy moment. And yet, nothing's shown. It's all implication, and yet it's also so powerful, too, because you're like, oh my gosh, what just happened? To show you what you can do. The R, because I'm the unknown stuntman that made Eastwood such a star. Ask the chat about that quote. Your Irish Patriot nerd. We're going to start to wrap things up here, guys. The Fall Guy show was from the 80s and starred Lee Majors, $6 Million Man. Oh, okay. Very nice. Her sci-fi Lion King gets weird when you consider how lion prides actually function. Just going to leave that one at that. Laura, it's weird how often we agree in movies you have good taste. Oh, Laura. And that's why you're one of my go-tos. That's why I trust your judgment very, very highly. So normally, if Laura hates a movie, I'm probably going to hate it too. Rob D. Peter Jackson's King Kong has one of the best horror scenes, the deep trench with all the giant bugs and scorpions. CGI fest. Michael Burgett, another Warner Brothers CinemaCon film showed off was new M. Night film Trap, stars Josh Hartnett. Premise sounds interesting. Dad takes daughter to concert, ends up being trapped to try and catch a serial killer. It's M. Night, though. He's not had a good track record recently. Alright, there's a recent German 7-disc official re-release of Lynch's Dune that includes the Spice Diver fan edit on one disc, and I have no interest in it because it's Lynch's Dune. Don't reopen that wound, Hardwick. Denis Villeneuve went full K Godfather mode for Janie. I like that reference. As Vito would say, look how they massacred Paul's wife. I can't do his voice. Also, have you read Beyond the First Dune book? No, I've just read the first, and my wife went on to the others, and she said I should probably just leave it with the first one. Hardwick, Jackson's King Kong is hit and miss for me. I don't like some of the casting and story changes from the original, but the visuals of Skull Island and 33 New York are incredible. Again, there's definitely some good things in there, but unacceptable views dropped in to leave a like. Thank you. Lukezilla, Jackson Kong was my first introduction to Kong, so that movie will always have a special place in my heart, even if it's a long, I mean, it's more than just a long movie, dude. It really is. I would say the only thing I like about the King Kong movie is the King Kong ride that they made from it, because it's a lot shorter, and I don't have to deal with any of the human characters and the acting. Oh, let's see. And then the final comment, Prince Screen at A52 says, Dune 2 would be better if we played M&M's Without Me over the It would feel so empty without me. Na, 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 na. Man, throwback to childhood. I agree. And yet that is the best. I agree, because you go in there and you're like, what the heck am I looking at? But the effects look kind of cool. But it's like, hey, at least I don't have to sit through an entire slogfest of a movie by the guy who made Lord of the Rings. That's what makes it worse. You're like, this dude made Lord of the Rings. And then for some reason, he got obsessed with CGI and he made Kong. And now we have the Monsterverse, and it's just not good. Full circle. All right, anybody, I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up there. I'm going to go and see how the wife's doing and try and get a little bit of, I don't know if we have any more ice cream, actually. I think we have king cake randomly. We froze a king cake before Lent started, so I think that is now here. Mummy Ride is fantastic. Sorry, last comments always come in. They always know I'm leaving and that they always will answer and leave more comments. Zendaya is a terrible actress. I don't think she's a terrible actress per se. I do think that she's not a great actress. She's fine. That's about all I can say. She's functional. For me, Dune 2, the problem is the character more so than her. So anyway, that's it for me for real this time. You guys have been all amazing. I still have not had time. My life is just crazy, and there are so, like, I have a list in front of me of things that I still need to do. There's letters I need to write for students because they're going on a retreat. And I think I don't have time to do those now. And then I got to do a bunch of other things. I'm making rosaries for some of my students as well. And I'm out of supplies. And so I have to finish those. But I do appreciate y'all always putting up with me and my nonsense. and for always being here to support. It really does mean a lot. But because of that, I still only have my March shoutouts video. I'm going to try to get one, if not two, podcast recorded for any of my members, because that is one of the perks you get with membership here on the channel. The giveaways channel is still going strong. I know I have not been as active there, but I'm trying to make sure that the giveaways are valuable. Right now, there's still an open giveaway. I'll be closing it very, very soon, though, on the Discord channel. Got to be a Keep It The Buy For Us level or above member on the Discord channel. But I've got a 4K copy of Abyss to give out there, and then two Blu-ray copies of The Iron Claw, my favorite film, and let's be honest, the best film of 2023. And I've got a bunch of other stuff coming. I just got these in, Criterion Collection, The Roaring Twenties. I've actually never seen this before, but I saw Criterion, and more importantly, I saw Humphrey Bogart and James Cagney. So that immediately had me excited, so... let me know y'all's thoughts about that if you've seen the film on the way out tonight. But those will be going up for giveaway soon over on the giveaways channel. And a bunch of other stuff. Got tons of movies down here. And I'll have to do another digital codes giveaway there too soon. So stay on the lookout for that. But things are crazy. It's getting close to the end of the school year. Insane that we're already there. But I do appreciate y'all nonetheless for always putting up with my insanity and my nonsense. So anyway, you guys are all amazing and beautiful people. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your evening. Continue to have a blessed Easter. And as always, God bless.